Hi there, and thanks for joining us on today's episode. Three small Cork companies on the up. One keeping kids fit, another providing real-time translation, and another that's offering a shared space for creatives. I'm Jonathan Healy, and this is Red Business.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.
Now, getting kids motivated and keeping them active has become increasingly challenging during the winter months when everybody was locked down. But my next guest is on the way to rescue parents. Claire McSweedy, founder of Cool Play. How are you?
I'm great, Jonathan. It's great to be here with you today.
Now, Cool Play is spelled in a very cool way, if you don't mind me saying. It's K-U-U-L Play. Tell us about it.
I'm glad you think so. Well, actually, we were initially named last year We Play. Our work arose out of when we made a digital pivot during COVID to support the primary schools. So we were called We Play. And as we evolved throughout the year, we really wanted to see what the kids thought of the program. So we checked in with the kids with our pilot before Christmas and the teachers, and we discovered that they thought the program was a lot of fun, very cool and interesting. And so we really listened to what they had to say, and we adopted the name Cool Play. Now, K-U-L is actually the Swedish for fun and enjoyment. And K-U-U-L, the way we spell it, in the US, where we also have a pilot running, it actually means like super cool.
So okay.
We really felt it embodies the essence of our program.
I'm very old and nerdy, so I don't understand the spelling of it, but I'll take your word for it. We have had a real challenge. You talked about pivoting during COVID. Keeping kids active has become really tough in the last few months.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we already have a global children's physical inactivity problem. You know, currently pre-COVID, 17% of primary school children here in Ireland are active enough to be healthy. So that's like less than one in five children here meeting the daily activity guidelines of 60 minutes of activity a day, you know, and that was pre-COVID. And as we both know, like COVID and restrictions, you know, sport and activity was one of the first casualties, you know, with many avenues cancelled. So it's been exacerbated, definitely.
Right. So how does it work then? How do you get kids up off the couch and get them having fun with PE and making sure that what you're doing is accessible to kids of all shapes and sizes?
Absolutely. So Cool Play is a learning platform for PE that really develops children's physical literacy with a unique methodology that's curriculum aligned to PE and that's really built on science. So what's special about Cool Play is its inclusiveness. It's exactly that. You know, we found that many children who already consider themselves maybe non-sporty, those that don't really engage in PE, they especially thrive on Cool Play because it allows them to participate, learn and develop in PE alongside the children who are very sporty.
I mean, I've seen it myself, you know, my own kids. Like, not everybody loves running. Not everybody, you know, wants to become a muscle-bound Egypt with big, massive muscles. But they do enjoy running around. They do enjoy playing. How important is play to all of this rather than just having a strict format like we used to have back in my day? You jumped the hobby horse, you fell off the far side and you did it again.
Absolutely, you know, and that's exactly it. You know, for a lot of kids, their relationship with PE and sport isn't always a positive one. And so play is essential because it embodies the essence of what it's about for kids. Because the number one reason kids don't enjoy PE or drop out of sport is because it's not fun. And so the term in the science community that we have for this is called physical literacy. And really, simply put, it's just the ability to move, basic movement skills, and then developing children's confidence and motivation and empowering them with the joy of movement to be active for life. So you really hit the nail on the head there. This isn't about making Olympic champions out of anybody. It's really giving them the tools and the joy to be active and lead an active life, because we know that kids who are active do better in life.
Yeah, well, it's very obvious they do that. Now, your background, you're pretty sporty yourself. You are a former national athletics champion, aren't you? And an All-American athlete. So what was your sport of choice, Claire?
Yeah, I was a track athlete. So I started out as a sprinter and I found my forte in middle distance running and the 4x4 relay.
Okay, and you went on to enjoy that at a very high level by the sounds of it, but you saw coaching at both ends of the extreme. You saw the intense coaching that's needed for that level, and you saw the kids who were being left behind as well.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I was given huge opportunities and I just chose to pursue it to that level. And I suppose through my work in working in elite sport in the US with professional teams, you know, I saw other athletes who decided and to pursue it, but it was the joy and the love of it. And I think what, you know, with the master's in exercise science and my background in this area, I really wanted to transfer the mind and body, I suppose, skill sets that these athletes that have to children, you know, and show them, give them the opportunity, you know, to develop that positive relationship to be active.
You work a lot with schools, don't you? And schools, it's been very hard to do this right when they don't have the kids in front of them. Hopefully it'll ease out over the next while. But do you still see a role for yourself post-lockdown in helping schools be creative in how they teach PE?
100%. So this particular platform is ideal during COVID and absolutely post-COVID as well. So through the learning platform, it empowers the teachers to be able to lead the PE class through instructional, gamified, interactive learning content. It fosters that environment for the children's motivation. And so it takes the planning and the chaos out of PE for teachers, allowing them to really approach it in an integrated well-being approach. So we're considering really developing both the mind and the body in PE. So, I mean, if you can picture a 10-year-old little boy or girl who believes that they're not sporty or they're not good enough, or, you know, they're the kid that always gets caught, you know, in the game of tag and they're hanging at the back of PE. Like, it's no wonder that these children, and there's a lot of them, you know, who have low confidence and low motivation to join in. And I've worked with over 2,000 kids in primary schools and in over 50 schools, actually. And I've seen this on a daily basis. So when their teacher uses Cool Play as a support tool, the child then goes on a journey of discovery where their self-belief actually shifts. And we've seen this, you know, in our studies with the pilots and the feedback from the teachers afterwards, where the children are telling us, like, well, actually, I can do this. And actually, I really like this. And that leads to that behavior shift, you know, where they become more active outside of PE. And one of the unique things about this platform is the children can access it at home with their families and their parents. So the learning is being taken home and they can communicate back what they're doing back to the teacher. And, okay, you know, from our pilot, the teachers were absolutely astounded because the children were quite happy to do all of this activity and as almost like as homework, you know, but not homework.
It sounds like you're really empowering the kids, which is exactly how you should do it, to get them up off the couch. And fingers crossed that we'll all get back to moving around outside and they'll get back to their sports and they'll get back to doing PE using the Cool Play rules together, as opposed to doing it virtually in the next little while. Claire McSweeney, the website is Cool Play. That's KULPlay.com. Good luck here. Good luck in the statesides with your plan over there. And thanks so much for joining us at Red Business, Claire.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Red Business. All that's best about business in Cork.
Next up, we're going to talk to the man behind a not-for-profit shared workshop in the heart of Cork City's Docklands. Fergus, where's your surname? Fergus Summers. Fergus Summers, how are you?
I'm very good, Jonathan.
Lovely to talk to you. Thanks very much for joining us. You're down in the Marina Industrial Park. Well, you are at the best of times. Obviously, circumstances being what they are, you're not there at the moment. But I love the idea that you're bringing local furniture making back to a location that was just the heart of industry in Cork for decades.
Absolutely. And it's a really nice place to be, actually, the Marina Park. You know, it has such history for Cork City. You can almost feel the enterprise and the work that was done there oozing out of the walls. It's quite a part of a theme that's been going on in a lot of cities across Europe that, post industrial spaces are being reused by artisans and groups like that to sort of reinvigorate cities and bring creativity and a bit of color and that to back into their cities. So it's a really nice location.
Yeah, it is, and the what you're doing there is great as well. Tell us exactly what the project is all about.
Well, the Benchspace as an organization was established to equip and support graduates coming out of creative courses in Cork City, So we're talking about kind of making based disciplines like furniture making, jewelry, glasswork, metal. My own day job, I work for Cork ETB teaching furniture making, and it's something that some of us had recognized for a while that, you know, we were training a lot of people, very creative, talented, skilled people. And once they left the educational environment with all its resources, they were often found, you know, that the real world was a very difficult place to navigate. You know, they needed a whole new set of skills now to try and make themselves visible and to find work. And so, you know, building a career as a creative person is challenging enough in Cork without some support. You know, people often become isolated, and then it's kind of typical of craft and design workers that they do so much work, you know, in small studios away from the public
eye. I mean, it's not a collective experience, because you are kind of on your own using your artistic ability. By bringing them together, by bringing people of a similar disposition together in a single location, what are the benefits?
Well, there are a lot of benefits. Like for people who find themselves in that situation, wanting to start and make a career, and I think that's the way to think of it. You know, as careers, as like micro enterprises, the barriers, particularly say for furniture making, the one I know best myself is space and equipment is very expensive, and it's a big roll of the dice early in your career to try and to take on those costs when you're not fully confident that you can deliver the income on the other side. So. The immediate benefit of something like BenchSpace is allowing the use of a shared set of equipment and a shared space, which means people who come to us, we can offer them space and facilities, a business address, you know, all of that for a single, you know, monthly bill, and allow them to get on with the business of making their reputation.
For people who are involved in boring office work, such as myself, you know, you have an office and you can go and you can have your meetings. But for this creativity, to bring it together, I mean, effectively, is BenchSpace a little bit like Republic of Work, except for craftspeople?
It's very like that. Yeah, exactly. And it you know, what it does, apart from the, you know, the physical things of the space and the equipment, you know, you're immediately into a community of people who are like-minded and facing the same challenges. And there's, you know, there's a lot of peer support, a lot of peer learning, the whole thing of just becoming exposed by being in the BenchSpace space in the middle of the city in a commercial environment, rather than tucked down a laneway someplace in the countryside. Those kind of intangible benefits are huge, and they're really the difference between making a go of it or sort of disappearing into you know, anonymity.
So what kind of good stuff is coming out of BenchSpace already? I mean, what have you seen coming through in terms of manufacturers, makers and so on?
Well, I suppose it is an artisanal type of aspect of activity. So say what if you were to come to BenchSpace at the moment, what you'd see is our first unit, which we established in 2017, is a wood workshop. So it's got woodworking equipment, and it's got bays for five makers who can establish in there. So we've had a turnover of people who have gone out of there who are now running their own small enterprises. And more recently now, we have some jewelers and goldsmiths who joined us in the last year or so. And we're growing that community as well now. And I suppose, I think, you know, like a lot of businesses now, things have slowed down a lot with COVID and that. But as soon as we get over this patch and the restrictions lift a bit, we have other disciplines that we want to roll out, like textiles and metalwork, and then on into some digital technologies.
So, you obviously, your background, you were a teacher as well, weren't you?
I still am. As you mentioned at the outset, BenchSpace is run as a social enterprise. So up until quite recently, it's been run primarily as a voluntary activity, but and I suppose maybe we talk about that in a moment. Thanks to the Leo, you know, we're putting that on a professional footing more and more, and we should see some big improvements, big step change in the next 6 months.
So tell us a little bit about that support then, because obviously local enterprise week is a big thing around now. What have the Leo done that is of great assistance to organizations such as BenchSpace?
Well, to talk about our personal experience, like the Leo have been involved at a very early stage. The Leo in the Cork City, originally under Adrian Rogers, she personally took a great interest and was very supportive. And I mean, the formal programs that they have, such as the priming grants and the online trading voucher and the mentor scheme, we've used all of those. But it's the again, it's kind of the intangibles. You know, it's the someone at the very early on to say, no, this isn't a mad idea. This actually could work. You know, when somebody with a lot of experience tells you that, then that's those kinds of things are very, very important at an early stage. So the big contribution, I think, is that, you know, we were encouraged and advised and supported to apply for Enterprise Ireland funding, which we were successful in doing. And the benefits of that now should be accruing very, very shortly. We have, about 2 weeks ago, we have now a full-time manager, Maeve Murphy, who started under that grant. And as soon as we get past the COVID restrictions, we have a capital grant that we can draw and start to improve and improve our offering. You know,
what so you're going to hit the ground running. Bottom line, everything that's produced there has to be sold. Is every artist and maker responsible for selling their own work, or is there somewhere we can collectively go and view everything?
Well, at the moment, it's a bit like that, but there are there's another organization, Cork Craft and Design, which is similar social enterprise. And so, in fact, you'll see that this summer now, a lot of events are organized as part of Cork Craft Month. They also have a retail space in the city, in the Mills in Douglas. Again, they're pivoting now from in the COVID conditions to move online, and did that very successfully last year during Craft Month. So those opportunities are there. There are other ways as well. You know, there's project work and commission work, that kind of thing that interests some makers. So, you know, we'll be actively pushing more projects like that, like the Parklet project that we're doing for Cork City. Those are also opportunities, you know, for makers to learn on the job and learn their skills and get connected.
Fergus, it sounds like a great initiative. Not every business is the straightforward up and down. This is a great way of helping out people who are creative and coming together and just giving them that space in which to work with confidence. Benchspacecork.ie is the website address if you want to get any more details on that. But Fergus Summers of Benchspace, thanks so much for joining us on Red Business, and best of luck to you and all your colleagues.
Thank you very much, Jonathan.
The only show in town for Cork business, Red Business.
Now, my next guest has established a translation company that has developed software as a service for matching translators with companies. It's become increasingly challenging to get the right kind of translation done at the right time, but Translit is coming to the rescue. Alex Chernenko, how are you?
I'm very good, Jonathan. Thank you for having me today.
Tell me a little bit about Translit. When did you set it up?
Well, we started in 2009. I was working as a translator interpreter, and I was helping individuals translating their personal documents and helping them to communicate where they go into hospitals, guard stations. So, you know, working as a freelancer and then moving into starting my own business. And from then, we kind of grew to 3 office locations and a team of 20 people, and now serving both individuals, businesses, and even government bodies, providing translation interpreting services.
It's very much a personal service, though, isn't it? You need a human. You need somebody there to translate in real time. Software hasn't quite made it to the point at which it can do real-time translation to the standard required.
Yeah, and when we talk about translation, we have to make for the listeners very clear that there is translation and interpreting. So translation has a good bit of technology with machine translation, where the interpretation side of things still requires human, and that's where Translit actually is positioning itself. We are more focused on human to human voice translation. We still do written and translation, but we actually specialize in voice services. And yes, indeed, it still requires human-to-human connection.
So what does Translit do? So like, who are your main customers, if I can put it that way?
Well, if you start with individuals, that could be anybody who translates documents or cannot speak English language, which is, of course, spoken in Ireland, and they need to speak, whether they're a doctor or a welfare officer or policeman, doesn't matter. So we help to provide a written and spoken communication. And when you come to clients, it could be a solicitor talking to their clients, it could be a GP, or it could be a government body who has non-English speaking class talking to their employees and staff. And then would be conferences, event organizers who have international delegates who want to participate, but again, they don't understand the language and they want to listen it in their own language. So it would be across different industries.
Yeah, and you presumably have a bank of translators, if I can call it that way, to pull from. How many people do you work with?
Well, as of now, we have more than 3,000 translators and interpreters in our database.
Okay, so that's a lot of people. Covering how many languages?
More than 120 languages. And when you when you look at different language pairs, I would say it could be a couple of hundred.
Yeah, now basically, Alex, I'm seeing why you need software to manage all of this, because if you've got 120 different languages, you need to be able to go through that quite quickly. How does the new software product work?
Yeah, so to tell you how the idea started, the world moves online towards marketplaces. So you want to order a taxi. Before, you used to read many taxi agencies and they would connect you with the drivers. And then apps become popular. So you just pick up your mobile phone and you would press a button and a taxi would arrive. You would do the same thing with food deliveries, but that hasn't happened to the language industry. So we came up with this idea to actually create a pizza-like or taxi-like experience for somebody who is going to a conference or who is going to their doctor, and they just order an interpreter without having to ring 10 agencies, get quotes, and you know, go through this hassle. So the idea was basically to build a software that would match interpreters with the clients directly. That's where it all started.
And it kind of grew from there. So what has the customer response been since you've gone to market?
Well, we launched in November last year. And since then, we already have 2,500 users. So we have about 2,200 interpreters already registered. And they're based not just in Ireland, but overseas. And then we have clients and other language service providers. So the users are growing. The number of jobs is only getting started now. So we focused on the user growth. We haven't had many transactions yet on the platform. So it's only kind of getting traction now because of the remote environment. And I believe that COVID actually were more of an opportunity for us to actually have the users transition into the online and remote.
Why set it up in Cork, Alex? That's the real question. It's a business that's on the up, and certainly you can see how it'll become very, very big. But why launch it from here?
Well, I moved to Cork in 2012, and we kind of opened up an office there. And the company growth started with the Cork base. We had office in Limerick and Dublin, but when we set up a base, we began a relationship with local business, and actually our investor is from Cork. So we were able to secure an investment deal. We were able to secure two government tenders pretty much after launching the office in Cork. So it's been like, and of course the local enterprise office, they've been much of a help for us. So with the help
of... Your ambition, though, was rather global, because this is the type of product that could spread quite easily. It would work in different markets.
Indeed. So the ambition was that we start in Ireland, then go to UK, but we already see more users outside of Ireland than actually inside. And yes, it has a huge potential. We are growing our user base, and we are essentially improving the technology. To add one point, so when we created the software, it was a booking and scheduling. And then everything went remote, but our technology did not provide actual service delivery. So think of it this way. It's like you can book somebody, but the actual service has to use a third-party technology. And as of January, which was just last month, we actually launched a second technology to be able to provide interpreting directly to the clients. So we now have two pieces. It's you can book and schedule interpreters, but you can now also receive the service via a second piece of technology that we just launched a month ago. So we are adding these new features to kind of respond the way the world is moving.
So people can find out more by going to the website, which is translit.ie. That's TRANSLIT.ie. Alex, it's a fantastic company, a great idea that has come from relatively humble beginnings, but is definitely heading in the right direction in 2021. Absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us on Red Business.
Jonathan, thanks a lot. It was a pleasure.
My thanks as always to all of my guests. Don't forget you can download every episode of Red Business from redextra.ie. Myra Hayes-Goff was the producer, and we will catch you on the next one.
Red Business, Cork's exclusive business podcast.